Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe here today, just handling a little paperwork and anyway. So, always happy to be with the Silk or Joe Show, always happy to be hosting, and appreciate you all tuning in on these fabulous weekends when we first air. Or maybe you're not tuning in on the weekend, maybe you're just cheating and listening to the show during the week. Regardless of how you listen, though, we want to thank you for that, and if you want to show some gratitude towards the folks keeping us on the air, go to mainstreetradionetwork.com. Find out more about the show, find out about the Al and Nathan Show, too, which I host several times a week, all there at mainstreetradionetwork.com, podcasts for the program, as well as the app. And then, you know, while you're at it, go check out alannathan.com too. Find, pay tribute to the late, great Alan Nathan. Check out some of the columns, op-eds, articles that he's done during the last 25 years or so right there at alannathan.com. And we are on social media as well. Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, X at Alan Nathan for when you want to know if I'm hosting the show that day or not. And we want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. Speaking of the Alan Nathan Show, you know, earlier this week, I was talking about the Dignidad Act, and, well, I got it wrong a little bit. I corrected myself on Friday, but you know what? If you didn't catch it Friday, you know, here's some more. And I guess it's my age showing, because it looked so good earlier this week, because it reminded me of the 2013 stuff when I first began interning for the Al Nathan Show all those years ago. And actually, I was interning with this before the Silk or Joe Show even existed. Amazing. Actually, the Silk or Joe Show bears my name only for the last 5 years. It was known as Jane when it first came about. That was November of 2013. So long, long ago, but I just realized that I've been interning with the company longer than the program even existed. Wow. Anyway, I'm not an intern now. That doesn't mean I'm an intern now with it. But anyway, yeah, so way back then, though, the Congress was working on this bill for immigration reform or whatever, because Obama was being accused of being soft on immigration, and even though he got the title of Deporter-in-Chief, what he'd been doing was he'd been doctoring the numbers a little bit by counting people turned around at the border as deportations, which totally inflated the numbers as opposed to what deportation actually means, which is you get into the country and then you are deported. So just really wanted to look good on those numbers. And I have talked to people before who said that Obama was actually very weak on immigration. His own personal ideology was rather open borders, despite what was in his Grammy-winning book. And despite what he has said on the Senate floor, he was actually very much in favor of mass immigration. And even to the point where some stuff he was advocating on the Senate floor, he ends up defeating it in secret, behind closed doors, just because he doesn't want it. He doesn't actually want it. And, you know, it's easy stuff for senators to do. All you got to do is just start you make a reasonable statement that goes on C-SPAN. At least that's how it was 20 years ago. You make a reasonable statement that goes on C-SPAN. Maybe the news networks pick it up. But then behind closed doors, you make some very unreasonable demands. Like in Obama's case, he's talking about E-Verify. He said building a wall is a great idea, but it's not enough. We need E-Verify to ensure that there's no reason for illegal immigrants to be lured into the country in the first place by the promise of jobs. But then behind closed doors, you know, he's probably attaching terrible demands to the E-Verify legislation. Like, yeah, I want E-Verify, but I also want all Republicans to show up with pink hats. just some ludicrous ideas that go into there that no one would agree to, and he knows no one would agree to, therefore the legislation gets defeated. So that's how he was back then. So it may have looked like a bit more moderate, and he pretended to be one in order to get elected, but there was no moderation there. And we saw that play out during his administration, where we end up with problems with illegal immigration, despite the fact that he was the alleged deporter-in-chief, when really he wasn't deporting much of anything. He was just stopping people at the border and counting that, which no president prior had done, which boosted the numbers. But then also there's the gotaways and stuff like that, and yes, he had kids in cages as well, so he wasn't great on immigration. But there was a bipartisan push to do some kind of border security back then, which I gotta wonder what would have happened if that had succeeded, what that would have looked like. because back then the GOP wasn't particularly strong on immigration either. They were still in the, you know, as the late Alan Nathan would say, the GOP was all for cheap labor, and Democrats wanted cheap votes, so both sides wanted to have some amount of illegal immigration coming into the country. And then there was Obama's Dream Act as well, which came out in 2014 in the midst of this bipartisan attempt to get some kind of immigration reform done. Of course, the Dream Act didn't come to any kind of fruition. And Trump actually himself even advocated slightly for the Dream Act during his first term. But that was in exchange for border security, and the Democrats showed their hand because they absolutely refused it. You know, Trump said, hey, I'll take, it was like a million or something of those Dream Act people, and I will, you know, we'll make them citizens, we'll put them on a pathway to citizenship, but in exchange, need Congress to give me money for border security, build a wall, more agents, all that, and Democrats refused. They just wanted the legalization part, they didn't want the border security part. And that was only, what, 3 years after Obama left office, 2 years after Obama left office. And there ended up being a shutdown over that, as I recall. I think that's one of the things that the Democrats shut down Congress over. But you might be wondering, well, where the hell was the GOP during all this? Why didn't they do anything about border security? Exactly. That's what voters were wondering, too. And perhaps our next guest, he'll be talking about a little bit about the GOP civil war in Texas with someone who was around at that time, because you had Jeff Cornyn. He is one of the people in Congress right now who is doing nothing in order to help the president's agenda. He's been in the Senate since 2002, so he was around during this first Trump term that I was discussing just now, where nothing was gotten done by anybody on the GOP side as far as immigration reform went. They had the chance, but they blew it. Just like they have blown their chances for doing anything now, because later we're only 7 months away from an election, and what is the Senate GOP? All they've done is block everything that the American people want: immigration reform, the SAVE Act, like issues that everybody wants. You know, everybody wants deportations. Well, not everybody, but it's like 60% of the country want deportations, according to polls, and 80% of the country want to show ID before you vote. It's not a losing issue for either party, really. But Democrats and the Republicans have ganged up together in the Senate to block it all. It's like the last place where the old school GOP exists, the ones that campaign in order to get your money and then don't actually do anything except stall the Democrats' agenda for a few years. Because that's all the GOP did in the Senate, for how long now? Since the Obama years, at least, when they decided to cash in on that, when I suppose corporate America itself started shifting towards the Democrat Party when they realized, hey, we can get this cheap labor from the illegal immigrants, and the Democrats are the ones to get it through, and they're the ones who are going to be in power, and the Republicans have effectively ceded control to them. It's a rather corrupt dealings going on there, and the average voter out there, of course, you know, you think, we're stuck in this bipartisan system. What else are you going to vote for, right? Are you going to vote for an independent candidate, or are you going to vote for the uniparty? That's all you got. And until many other people see it that way and see the actual issue here, that they are being deceived by the establishment in the GOP, they're probably not going to get anything done. And on the Alan Nathan Show, actually earlier this week, I was talking with this guy from Our Republican Legacy. Now, he himself seems to be a bit of a charlatan, but what the points he was making were valid about how there are different sections of the country with different types of Republican voter, some who are very much offended by Trump. Like he said that Trump got them killed and got the party killed in Washington State, even though he plays well in other parts of the country. So it seems like that there's room for several political parties in this country. We shouldn't really be in. The only thing that should be non-binary about America should be our political system. I guess that should be someone's campaign slogan right there, bumper sticker right there. We just really do need more than two parties. Two parties cannot represent the whole of the country any more than two representatives in the House of Representatives can represent the whole of the country. And then that's where we get to stuff like in Virginia, how they're trying to shove down the redistricting thing. They're trying to say this is to save the U.S. This is not about the state of Virginia. You and the state of Virginia must forego being represented adequately. You must agree to be represented by someone based in Northern Virginia, no matter where you are in the state. You must agree to be someone who is based in Northern Virginia to be your representative in order for us to save the country. So direct representation no longer exists. You must be subsumed to the greater interests of the political party. As if the representative you elect to Congress isn't going to represent your area, and that's not what the House of Representatives is about at all. It's crazy. And that is the sort of, well, I didn't even get into the Dignidad Act, but that's okay. I got into it on yesterday's Al Nathan show. So you can listen to that. That's a great advertisement for that. But anyway, point is, Democrats want you thinking on a national level. No matter where you live, the party is based in D.C., top-down dictation, exactly what the Soviet Union did, which led to famine, starvation, death. That's what the Democrats are about. More Silker Joshua after this break.
It's tax season, and if you're self-employed or a small business owner, new tax laws can make things confusing fast. TurboTax Experts for Business connects you with an industry expert who helps maximize deductions and provides year-round support. TurboTax expert Carissa Brunson explains.
TurboTax Experts for Business helps small businesses throughout tax season and beyond with done-for-you tax filing services, year-round support, and audit protection. We'll find every deduction and maximize your tax savings so you can keep more money in your business. Being tax compliant is among small business owners' top concerns, but it's often time-consuming and research-intensive to figure out taxes on your own. Find peace of mind knowing you can focus on running your business while your taxes are being handled by a capable, specialized business tax expert with TurboTax.
Learn more at TurboTax.com/business.
Spring is almost here, and whether it's a weeknight dinner or a weekend get-together, now's the perfect time to add fresh ideas to the menu. With more, here's Chef Jamie Gwen.
The best spring menus start with ingredients that feel comforting, adaptable, and right at home across meals and moments. Bush's baked beans are one of my favorite year-round go-tos. They've been loved for generations and bring rich, familiar flavor to any meal. Whether you enjoy the classic Bush's Secret Family recipe or add your own signature twist, Bush's baked beans are a savory sweet complement to Easter menus and spring brunches.
Baked beans are easy to use and fit naturally into a wide variety of meals.
Try breakfast egg and bean burritos or baked bean mac and cheese with bacon for a smoky sweet dish. Baked beans bring that little extra flavor I love to every bite and feel right at home on my spring menu.
For more spring meal ideas, visit bushbeans.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with y'all today. I just realized that the guest list here has all the segments in Central Time, not Eastern Standard. Oh, well. The guest, though, that we are joined by has been working in Central Time for a bit. We are joined now by John Smirak. He is former senior editor at The Stream. He was press secretary for Louisiana Governor Mike Foster, as well as a reporter and editor at Success Magazine and Investors Business Daily, and is co-author of 14 books, including No Second Amendment, No First, and has been closely monitoring the situation in Texas on Central Time. John Smirak, appreciate you being here. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks.
Yep, glad to have you on board. So let's see, this is the Ken Paxton versus John Cornyn race. What's going on with this?
Well, the race is very close, and the Republican establishment has poured $100 million into a primary to help a three-time senator keep his seat from a pro-Trump a conservative opponent. So it's clear the Republican establishment does not want Ken Paxton. It's been a full court press. Like, all sorts of influence has been exerted. The Karl Rove machine is revved up. Well, now a new controversy has happened. The Dallas County Republican chairman, Alan West, who had in the past been a real supporter of election security, like paper ballots and hand-counted ballots and voting in your precinct so that the votes can be audited, all of a sudden, he's flipped on all those issues. And local Republican leaders are really confused and really upset at why Alan West, who they thought of as a hero, is suddenly they raised all this money. They went on Steve Bannon and raised the money to do paper ballots. And then they had all the money. Alan West decided not to do it. And now, as we're getting close to the runoff in May between Cornyn and Paxton, West now wants to get rid of precinct-based voting on Election Day, which means the primary votes will be impossible to audit, so therefore vulnerable to fraud. Given that the RINOs were willing to spend $100 million to keep John Cornyn in the Senate, we wonder if there's going to be vote fraud, if there's going to be Democrats voting in the Republican primary. Unfortunately, Greg Abbott, our governor, supports open primaries so Democrats can pick our nominees. It's no wonder that the Texas Republican Party is one of the worst in America. It's riddled with Democrat, I call them Democrats in drag or closeted Democrats.
Wow. And I guess it's no wonder that there's so much opposition to the SAVE Act if they're going to pull these fraudulent shenanigans at the local level. Just imagine what else is going on in other states.
Exactly. If even in Texas, the Republican Party can't get its act together to close its primaries and cut off the possibilities of vote fraud, it's like one betrayal after another. It's really staggering. They're going to come up on a vote next week on whether to vote no confidence in Alan West as Republican county chairman, but he's not obligated to resign even if that happens. He's going on the offensive in the media, attacking all his conservative critics, and it's kind of an ugly little brouhaha right here in the heart of Texas.
Wow. And Alan West, you know, I wouldn't want to think that myself. He's been on the show a few times. He's been on the Alan Nathan show a few times. I've booked him on the programs.
Call him up and have him explain himself. I think that would be very helpful. I would love to know what his motives are.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be anything pleasant, though, to hear about those motives. Because why would you advocate such fraudulent election shenanigans?
Well, what he's saying is, we're afraid we're going to get sued for voter suppression. You know, he's basically taking the New York Times narrative at face value and claiming that if we try to do the right thing, we might get sued. But that's what RINOs do. That's what Kristi Noem did in South Dakota on transgender issues. I'm protecting the state from lawsuits. If you do the right thing, of course Mark Elias is going to sue you. If Mark Elias is not suing you, it means you're not doing it right.
Yeah, that's how he makes his career, by accusing people of voter fraud. I mean, it's funny when Democrats say it doesn't exist, but then you have Mark Elias, who wouldn't exist if voter fraud wasn't a thing that he could prosecute.
Yeah, exactly. So why is Alan West preemptively surrendering to normizing and Mark Elias. It's just staggering. Now, I have friends who are Republican activists here in Dallas, and they're fighting off despair. They're between outrage and despair. It's a really messed up situation.
Mm. Yeah, just when you see your party betray you like this, and when you have a clear winner designed with Ken Paxton, and then suddenly $100 million gets dumped on his opponent to keep him in when he hasn't done anything, and when there's no voter enthusiasm, you know, it's right. Almost like the GOP is willing to lose Texas in order to save just the butts of the few in charge.
Oh, absolutely. Just the way the Republicans established in the Senate is willing to lose the midterms in order to turn the House into an impeachment circus, and they want to get the MAGA movement out of the Republican Party. They want to pass it like a kidney stone so they can go back to the party of Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan.
Mm-hmm. And you know that after they sabotage the elections, they're going to blame Trump. They tried to do that in 2022. You know, all the sabotage that they did in the midterms then, and then they still managed to somehow squeak by with a minor victory. But they still said, oh, it's all Trump's fault. Trump just isn't popular, even though we're the ones who are sabotaging ourselves.
That's right. Trump is an anchor. Really? I thought he seems more like a life preserver. So all this going on while the liberal Republicans try to sneak in an immigration amnesty in the middle of a war, thinking we won't pay attention because of what's going on in Iran.
Yeah, I almost was bought with the Dignidad Act because it did have something I liked in there, you know, but paying restitution if you've been here for 5 years, but I'd actually prefer it to be 10 years myself. But, you know, paying restitution, that's pretty good. You've been cheating taxes. Pay us back. I want your money.
Let them mail us the money from their home country to which we have deported them permanently.
Right. But, like, the more I looked at it, though, the more it was, well, this is terrible. This is awful. And it has so many loopholes.
And they even put the name of it in Spanish. That's the ultimate screw you. How insulting. Who are these? Why didn't they put it in Haitian Creole? Mm. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and also just this, it was, if you are enrolled in, like, one of the programs that the act provides for, you can't be deported. I think that's stupid. And, you know, me personally, I think that if you're going to do that, because then everybody's just going to enroll in it, if you're going to do that, then if you fail the program or whatever, you face a firing squad. I think that would be helpful.
Listen, here's my solution, immigration. If you're an illegal alien and you snitch on 10 of your fellow illegals, we will get a green card.
You know, I think you might have something there. That would, because if we have 20 million people in the country illegally, then, you know, divide that by 10. We only keep 2 million and the rest are deported.
Yeah, well, we'll give you a green card and $1,000 in cash.
Yeah.
In $20 bills and a little Ziploc bag.
You know, I think that's a workable solution there, too. We just won't see it in Congress. You know, it should have been a red flag that Democrats were on board. Anything bipartisan these days is a red flag.
Yeah, really. I mean, the other party is not a mainstream patriotic political party. So it's like, oh, we're co-sponsored by the German Communist Party. Well, maybe it's not such a good bill then. Oh, mm-hmm. This one has the Nazis. Even the Nazis endorsed this. Oh, maybe we shouldn't go down that road, you know? The Democrats are the party of literal open borders, transing children, taking away parental rights. You can't negotiate with these carrots.
No, not at all. But John Smirak, appreciate you coming on the show. Where can us just find more of your work?
At Chronicles Magazine, and check out my book, No Second Amendment, No First. It's my most recent.
All right. Well, listeners, go do Thank that you. Because we're coming up to a break. John Smirak, appreciate you being on the show, but we got more Silker Joe Show on the other side.
Hi, this is James Dern. I'm the director of puppy programs at Canine Companions. We have a huge need for puppy raisers right now. Less than 1% of people who have a disability have a service dog. And, you know, we've been successful getting the word out about the benefits these guys can bring to their lives. But we really need more puppies and more puppy raisers. We need people who can spend the time with these guys to teach them all about our human world and how to be confident and relaxed in public places. Go to canine.org/puppynation and learn all about the organization there. You can watch a litter of 7-week-old Labrador Golden Cross puppies play on the live cam all week. And these guys are all future service dogs. They are about to head out to their puppy raisers next week and start their journey for a life of service. You can go to our website and look up canine.org and learn all about the different volunteer roles there and come join us.
April is Financial Literacy Month, and while many Americans focus on saving and growing their money, protecting it is just as important. Scams are becoming even more sophisticated and difficult to spot. Darius Kingsley is the Managing Director and Head of Consumer Fraud and Scam Prevention at Chase.
We're continuing to see an uptick in impersonation scams. Messages or calls that look like they're from a bank, law enforcement, or government agency trying to exploit our trust. Scammers are also targeting social media, particularly on marketplaces with fake listings, fraudulent job postings, and investment schemes. Additionally, AI is making fraud and scam attempts more convincing with voice cloning and deepfake images. Education is one of the best defenses against scams. Chase has resources and tools to help you learn about common scams and how to stay safe online.
For more information and tips, visit chase.com/security. April is Financial Literacy Month, and while many Americans focus on saving and growing their money, protecting it is just as important. Scams are becoming even more sophisticated and difficult to spot. Darius Kingsley is the Managing Director and Head of Consumer Fraud and Scam Prevention at Chase.
We're continuing to see an uptick in impersonation scams. Messages or calls that look like they're from a bank, law enforcement, or government agency trying to exploit our trust. Scammers are also targeting social media, particularly on marketplaces with fake listings, fraudulent job postings, and investment schemes. Additionally, AI is making fraud and scam attempts more convincing with voice cloning and deepfake images. Education is one of the best defenses against scams. Chase has resources and tools to help you learn about common scams and how to stay safe online.
For more information and tips, visit chase.com/security.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. I think I started earlier than I thought. But anyway, so this amnesty bill that we were talking about, you know, I admit I fell for it. I fell for it, folks. I thought it was reasonable at first glance, but then more information started coming out about it. You know, instead of reading the bill, of course, I just relied on early reporting on it. That's what you get for jumping in before the fires have really been consuming the objects. But anyway, so now apparently This would allow illegal aliens deported under President Trump in his first term to come back into the country somehow. Boy, that's a terrible thing. All the other crap that it does. And Laura Ingraham, she shredded Congressman Mike Lawler, Republican, alleged Republican out of New York, for taking on the bill, trying to defend it or whatever. And I probably deserved a good shellacking myself for any of the defenses I gave of it earlier this week. But anyway, I'm willing to come out and say that I was wrong once more information is available. Although, I am curious, speaking of more information available, about this 9 scientists so far linked to U.S. secrets found dead under odd circumstances. You know, it seems like if you had any role in the space program beforehand, maybe your number is coming up there. Wonder if the Artemis crew will even make it back to Earth. Or maybe this is all a hoax. They're trying to hide that the Artemis crew never left Earth in the first place. Anyway, but back to, I'm just jumping through headlines here that led me to this, because there's this headline about the 9 scientists dead right next to this headline about Laura Ingraham going after Mike Lawler, and this is all on Gateway Pundit's website. So nonetheless, we have this issue with Republicans in name only really selling their wares. And like I said, there was one or two items in that Dignidad Act that I did kind of like, such as if you'd been here 5 years or more, then, you know, there is a pathway to you staying here that involves an extra 7 years and then an extra 5 years after that. So 17 years of your life altogether just to obtain citizenship because you came in illegally, and then you paid restitution for that, which in many crimes you pay restitution for, and you're solid with the law as far as that's concerned. But maybe not 5 years, though. Maybe extend it a little further back, because that links into another problem with the bill, is the back of back that I pointed out earlier this week when I was still slightly not as angry about it, and that was the lack of background checks. Because it says there needs to be a background check, but how do you do that on someone who's only been here 5 years? Because you only have that 5 years to do a background check based on. You're not going to be able to figure out what they were in their country of origin. They're not going to tell you. And even if they did, you'd have to hope and pray that the country of origin had any kind of records which you could do a background check with, which is unlikely, because a lot of these countries people come from, like Haiti, for example, if it's an illegal immigrant from Haiti somehow got here, in 2020 or whatever, then there might not be any way to do a background check on them that goes back into their time in Haiti. They could have been living in Haiti for 30 years, and there's no way to do it because maybe no one recorded the person's birth. That happens a lot in Haiti, even before the society collapsed there, that they still had a problem where they just were not able to record everyone who was born. So no official record of your existence, how are you going to do a background check? And that could be the case with many other countries as well. And then, so that is a problem that's going to be faced, even if the ideal version of it comes through, where there's not so many loopholes. I did say on the show earlier this week, when I was first slightly in favor of it, that there would be loopholes to exploit. Boy, are there so many loopholes. But even if there weren't any loopholes around there, there'd still be an issue with this background checks, and how only 5 years of your life for what, someone who's 30, someone who's 40, someone who's 50. I guarantee you 5 years of the life is not enough to judge them. As someone who is in their 30s himself, 5 years is definitely not enough to judge. But so, 10 years, that'd be fine. If you cheat the law for 10 years or whatever, then pay restitution and back taxes for that entire period, then we have actually some reasonable means to do a background check. If you manage to behave yourself for 10 years, maybe you can behave yourself for the rest of the time required. And then the actual overall process then would be 22 years for staying in the country, which majority of your life, if you're under 44, so I would say that would be slightly fair. That be a much more fair way than open borders, and much more fair way than what's currently being proposed. But we're not going to get that, because it's Republicans in name only trying to appease the Democrats, so, and trying to appease the businessmen backing them. And Breitbart had a nice section on that where they were talking about the business folks. Actually, one quote from Breitbart that was alarming is, "This bill turns Texas blue." But let's see if I can go in my notes to the beginning. "The bill is designed to help GOP legislatures give business groups what they want without also creating millions of anti-GOP voters who would throw today's GOP politicians out of their jobs. What business wants is the continuation of the pre-Trump economic policy of extracting millions of people from poor countries to serve the U.S. consumer economy as wage-cutting workers, taxpayer-funded consumers, and apartment-sharing renters. The Democrats are happy to use this policy of consumer economy colonialism against citizens, gives them the delayed payoff of many millions of poor immigrant voters. This bill turns Texas blue. And those are all quotes from a Breitbart article about this. Of course, it's not immediate, but like in 12 years or whatever, right in time for the 2038 midterms, Texas will be flipped, as if they're not going to flip this year. And that's another concern, actually, about this Corn and Paxton feud. If somehow Paxton overcomes sabotage from the local GOP and all the attempts to stop him by the national GOP, then what's the national GOP going to do during the election? What are the local party affiliates going to do during the election to sabotage him? They would guarantee, I guarantee you, they would prefer that this radical leftist who perverts the name of Christianity that's running on the Democrat ticket, Republicans want, the Republican establishment want him to win if it means that Paxton loses. That's how they feel. And the thing is, though, at this point, I guess it's safe to say that that Tallarico dude, the Democrat, is going to win no matter what, because here's the only two scenarios that can play out, really, at this point. The only two scenarios I see happening going forward. Scenario number one, the establishment Republicans succeed. They squash Paxton like a bug because they see him as such, a little weevil in their corrupt wheat field. And with that happening, the local GOP voters in Texas just have no enthusiasm, no reason to turn out. Why the hell are we going to turn out? You destroyed our candidate, you people at the national level, dictating to us what we want. You destroyed the candidate to protect your corruption, to protect your do-nothing senators. Why are we going to vote? And they're not going to. Cornyn's going to lose. Or Paxton wins the primary. GOP voters are really enthused. They're really happy about it. But the Republican Party turns on Paxton and starts funding his opponent and manages to up the Democrat turnout. And perhaps there's some voter fraud going on, because certainly the SAVE Act ain't going to be passed by then, not with the GOP that we have in the Senate right now. And if that's the case, well, they still lose. And Texas gets a Democrat senator. Now, maybe they don't flip as Democrat as they would in the scenario where Republicans just don't bother showing up. I don't know how many seats are up in the at the local legislature level in Texas that would suffer from people just not showing up because of the Paxton-Cornyn feud, but it could be a terrible thing seeing Texas turning blue, and it would be blue forever because, you know, once Democrats get in power, they implement voter fraud to the best degree that they can, and they redistrict the heck out of everything. It'll be a total disaster. But that's what the GOP party wants at the top, because they would rather that happen than see themselves fall into irrelevancy after the Trump era is over. This is their last gasp. They are as cornered as the Democrat Party was after the 2024 election. Democrats were willing to die to keep their power in place. I talked about that on the Al Nathan Show earlier this week. Democrats are willing to die to keep their power in place, to keep their fraud in place. They will die for it, whether it's openly dying because they're defying agents of law enforcement in order to get on camera, or whether it's willing to die because illegal immigrants who are crucial to this fraud are killing them in their own communities. They don't care. They will die. They are willingly sacrifice their lives. And the GOP elite, they are the same way. They're willing to sacrifice you, you're the voter. They don't care that if Democrats take over your state because they failed. No, they want what little power they have left. This is their last desperate gasp. They are desperate. They are as desperate as those Democrats sacrificing themselves. They want to reclaim what power that they had before Trump came along. And they want you to forget about Trump. They want Trump to be a memory. They want you to believe some false history about Trump not getting anything done, when really Trump is the only one who is getting stuff done. And that's what probably pissed them off the most. The fact that Trump actually showed, hey, this is what a real president could do. This is what someone in power actually can do. All these excuses the GOP has are total garbage. And the establishment that was profiting off of doing nothing, profiting off of backroom deals with Democrats and businesses, profiting off deals with lobbyists, and profiting off of all that just to sit in Congress on their thumbs doing absolutely nothing while the country goes to burn, well, they're mad that Trump showed what could actually be done and showed what a brighter future looks like, and showed the voters exactly the kind of people they've been voting for all along. And that kind of, and those GOP folks, they will do anything to squash Trump's memory. More Silker Joe Show after this break.
I'm excited to be talking about this because I use ChatGPT all the time. My husband uses ChatGPT. My teenagers and their friends use ChatGPT. And that's what I want people to know. AI is already a part of our teenagers' everyday life. Safety is so important. And ChatGPT has a lot of protections in place for younger users. They're not going to get served up content that has, you know, mature material, explicit content. They're not going to get served up risky online trends or extreme beauty ideals. And there are these parental controls. So as a parent, my teen's accounts are linked to mine so that I control how they're using the tool. You can set time limits. You can set quiet hours so it can't be used during school or at bedtime. And you can turn off features like memory. And for more information, visit chatgpt.com/parent-resources.
Hi there. I'm Morgan Freeman. March is Amyloidosis Awareness Month, a time to shine a light on a heart condition that is underdiagnosed. ATTR cardiac amyloidosis, or ATTR-CM. The symptoms of ATTR-CM, like shortness of breath, swollen feet or legs, and carpal tunnel syndrome, can look like a lot of other things. So ATTR-CM can hide in plain sight. Experiencing a different heart condition of my own has taught me the importance of listening to what's happening beneath the surface. Now I'm using my voice to inspire others, like my friend Larry is.
I knew something was off when simple activities left me more winded than they should have. Playing golf, hiking alongside my wife, and keeping up with my grandchildren started to feel more challenging. I spoke to my doctor about my symptoms and started treatment with Attruby, also known as acoramidis. I'm sharing my story so others know they're not in this alone.
Attruby is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with ATTR-CM to reduce death and hospitalization related to heart problems. Tell your doctor if you're pregnant, plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding, and about the medications you take. The most common side effects were mild and included diarrhea and abdominal pain. If you have symptoms that don't add up, ask your doctor about ATTR-CM and if Attruby may be right for you. To learn more, visit attruby.com/radio. That's attruby.com/radio. Brought to you by Bridge Bike.
During the St. Patrick's Day festivities, Monster Energy returned to Chicago for the annual River Dine, and they brought two guests. Pro jet ski riders Tori Snyder and Coy Curtis ripped along the newly glowing green waters in a stunt show, a first in the half-century-old tradition. Following the River stunt show, the celebration continued at the city's annual St. Patrick's Day parade, where Monster Energy's Java Monster team brought festive energy along the parade route while distributing chilled cans of Java Monster Irish cream to parade goers. For more information, go to monsterenergy.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war.
this really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, co-host Joe with you all today. Of course, I should note that this segment is being taped on Thursday because there might be some development between now and when this airs, but we're joined now by Kenneth Abramowitz. He is a founder of SaveTheWest.com, a website dedicated to saving Western civilization from itself. He is the author of The Multi-Front War, Defending America from Political Islam, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. Kenneth Abramowitz, happy I'm the show. How are you today?
Great. Great to be with you.
Glad to talk with you. So we have this turmoil now over the ceasefire with Israel attacking targets in Lebanon, but those targets were never really part of the ceasefire, were they?
Well, that's what J.D. Vance said, that they were never part of the agreement, and then Iran suddenly decided that it's part of the agreement. By the way, this is typical when you're negotiating with someone who's insincere. Whatever agreement you have, the next day they add something and then something. And so it just shows that Iran's just not ready to negotiate seriously.
Now, it seemed more like they were hoping that all of their potential targets would be immune for 2 weeks so that they could rebuild real quick. And they're looking for any excuse to get out of the agreement. Now, I guess they still feel they're in a position of strength.
Yes, that's right. They haven't been defeated. By the way, just because you think you won doesn't mean the other team thinks they lost. Now, of course, in a basketball game or any game, it's very clear who won and who lost. But in the real world, we think we won, but they think they won also. And we have to make sure they think they lost. By the way, we went through this in World War II. Everyone forgets. It was 80 years ago. But Germany had to be defeated. And Japan had to be defeated, and they had to know that they were defeated. Iran doesn't yet know they were defeated. That's why the ceasefire, I think, will last only another day or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're, even though their navy has been wiped out, their initial wave of their leadership is dead, and they still feel that we have people, so we can still fight. We have weapons somewhere, so we can still fight.
Well, yes, also, you have to look at life from the point of view of bad guys. In other words, if you're a dictatorship, all you want to do is survive another day. They think they can outlast a democracy. See, democracies have special pressures. They're called voters and polls, and that puts pressure on politicians. They don't have any pressure on them other than the military. And so their feeling is if they can outlast President Trump's deadline of 2 to 3 weeks and outlast the 6 month, the 2 month period of time allocated to the war, then the democracy will pressure Trump to prematurely end, and that will be a victory for them.
And they do have precedent behind that because there's, well, first of all, Vietnam, that's kind of how we ended up ending that war, just public pressure against it, ginned up by the media, but then also the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan. The reason we pulled out when we did is because there was just so much public pressure against being there anymore.
That's exactly right. Democracies have a lot of advantages over dictatorships, but we also have some disadvantages. The disadvantage is that people want instant gratification. They want, oh, a war, okay, it's like a baseball game. You want to get it over by 5 o'clock, I have to go to dinner tonight. And so democracies have the weakness of a population that wants things faster than can be delivered to them. And dictatorships know that, and they play on that weakness of democracies.
And in particular, the dictatorship that Iran has a somewhat unique perspective among dictatorships because of the religion, that the particular branch of Islam that they subscribe themselves to, where, you know, from their perspective, they really are dedicated to bring back some messianic figure or whatever by either ruling the world or causing as much chaos as possible in the world. So for them, this is all just part of a religious struggle, and the rewards are in the afterlife anyway.
Yes, that's exactly right. They're looking for world chaos. They have this delusional idea that in world chaos, basically everyone fighting everybody else, which is why I call it World War III, that the 12th Imam from 1,000 or something years ago will come back. They call him the Mahdi or the Messiah, and he'll come back and save the world for Islam and destroy the infidels, which means Christians, Jews, and Hindus, and even Sunni Muslims. And that's why they've been attacking the Sunni countries also. So this is part of their apocalypse that they envision. And so that's why they're not giving up. They're I hate to say they're enjoying it, but they're expecting this. And so we have to give them what they expect until there's basically no one left. I won't say no one left in the country, no one left of the key leaders, so that they can be replaced by normal people.
Yeah, and hopefully there's people among the citizenry, because there has been a push against this regime from its own citizens. That's why 30,000 protesters got wiped out in the past few weeks. And so I guess the goal now, since no one wants to put American or Israeli boots on the ground, and I don't think Iran's neighbors are at the point yet where they want to invade, although Iran, I'm sure, will push them to that point if they keep this up. So, but in the meantime, we have to rely on if anything is any real change is going to happen. Yes, we can bomb the leadership to pieces, but until the citizens take the reins for themselves, we're just going to have to keep bombing leaders, and the American public doesn't have an appetite for that in perpetuity.
Sure. But President Trump said it very well just several days ago. He said, we need 2 to 3 more weeks. We have identified 3,554, I believe that's the right number, targets. And my response is, finish the plan. You announced it just a few days ago before the ceasefire. Finish the 3,500 or so targets, finish the 2 to 3 weeks, and then let's see how happy Iran might be to negotiate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because at this point, you know, ceasefire, like I said, just seems, if they were to adhere to it, it would just be to buy some time to get some weapons in place or something like that. It's not anything that they're going to adhere to. And we've seen that before with Hamas. Anytime that they've had a ceasefire, it's just been so that they could rebuild. It wasn't just because they changed their minds suddenly.
They didn't keep the ceasefire for 15 minutes. I'm in Tel Aviv now. I was in a bomb shelter in the basement of my building, looking at the internet on my little iPhone, and it said ceasefire announced. And I'm saying, wait a minute, ceasefire? I'm sitting in a bomb shelter because they just shot a whole bunch of missiles into Israel, and 30 minutes later, another volley. This was during the ceasefire. And subsequently, I found out 11 people were injured. So they're just not serious.
No. Well, Kenneth Abramowitz, appreciate you being on the show. And again, listeners, his website is SaveTheWest.com. And of course, his book is titled The Multi-Front War, Defending America from Political Islam, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. And of course, you can check out our websites, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com and WhatTheHeckAlanNathan.com as well. Be seeing you.
Opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.